Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
Okay.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
It's only a kick. A jump. A block. It's only a serve. It's only a tackle. A run. It's only for the fans. After all, it's only pressure. You got this. Adidas.
You're listening to Giants Croncast, a podcast chronicling the San Francisco Giants. Featuring Brian Murphy and Doug Brazoni. Part of FFSN, Fans First Sports Network.
This week we're talking about the Giants week that was, our things that we found interesting and concerning, and Doug, we're bringing it back, the Bullpen Trust Power Rankings for the month of April.
Finally, so many people have been asking us for Bullpen Trust Power Rankings. I cannot count. I get stopped by strangers on the street. And it's about time we bring it back.
Will it inspire or is it too dire? You'll just have to listen. I know this happened last week, but it's still carrying over into this week. So I got to ask, Doug, have you ever been to Mexico?
When I was a kid, I went to Acapulco with my parents. That kind of counts, I think, because it's like the Disneyland version of Mexico.
And did you get the runs or anything from that?
No, not that I remember. Saw some cliff divers.
Yeah. Oh, did you think those people were dying? And then no, they're going into the water.
We went there to see them. So I was like, I guess they know what they're doing, but that's very high to jump into the ocean.
I'm just imagining you having a zookeeper, those monkeys are killing each other moment. So the Giants are still sick. But they did go 4-2 this week, and it was, I don't know, not like inspiring or setting the world on fire, but isn't it nice to have your faith in numbers affirmed, Doug?
I've talked about it on the podcast the last couple of weeks. I wrote an article about it a little while ago where I was like, I think they're fine. I know they had a bad start, but they have a good chance of being better. And after you do that, you just kind of hold your breath like, oh, don't make me look stupid. Don't make me look stupid. Please don't make me look stupid. And they didn't make me look stupid. That's what I want.
They played two pretty good teams. I mean, the Astros are without Jose Altuve, and Michael Brantley. God, could you imagine if Michael Brantley had been playing in that series? That would have been annoying. But or Altuve, for that matter. Hard guys to strike out. But you know, the Giants winning those two games and then taking 2 out of 3 against the Brewers, although I would say that Sunday's game was pretty non-competitive, which was a little bit of a bummer. You know, the Brewers in my series preview, this is me. I asked you a question that I wanted to answer just as much, which is like, it is nice to have your faith in numbers reported, was looking at the difference. The Brewers were 18-13 heading into the series, and it didn't, like, looking at it, it's like, they don't look 5 games better than the Giants. And at one point, they're on a 4-game losing streak heading into the series. So at one point, they were 18-9, And you just look at it and it's like, it's middle of the pack pitching, middle of the pack hitting. Their defense is actually really fantastic. And the Giants, but like everything that they did well played right into the Giants' hands. It's like, oh, they give up fly balls. Well, guess what? The Giants are the best at converting fly, like hitting fly balls as home runs. The Giants are great ground ball pitchers. Guess what? The Brewers are great ground ball hitters. So this, you know, it just seemed like a series where it's like, oh, the Giants should hang in there. And they, even if we are not sure what kind of a team this is, I guess I get the sense of like, they're like a 500 team, and they should be 500 right now. And we should be wondering if they're going to become magic and like catch fire, right, to be more than 500. And right now I'm just waiting for them to catch fire to get to 500. So that's the disappointment I feel like this season. I'm so glad our format doesn't allow us to sometimes catch on those minor stories of the week. But, you know, the Mauricio Dubon story, it happened. There was a little kerfluffle with Mauricio Dubon, and we're not going to talk about it because it's over now. But, you know, he said some things which were maybe slightly misconstrued, but probably definitely more driven by emotion. And and everyone has had their say, and the Giants won the series, so it's all good.
And Mauricio Dubon's been awful since he made those comments, which is always the funniest part when people really miss him. And then I'm like, okay, but do you remember watching him play? There were a lot of bad parts to that.
Yeah. He's like, oh, he doesn't strike out a lot. Yeah, but he's hitting singles. He's not like walking or anything. Like he's not doing the things you would call like a well-rounded great baseball player. What he is doing, or what he has done, is filled in as a capable player for Jose Altuve, which is great. That's a lot of teams don't get that when their primary guy, especially a guy like Altuve, is out, is not playing. So can we talk about a guy who's fantastic, Doug? I really don't think he gets enough credit. Alex Cobb.
Absolutely. Yeah.
So yeah. His shutout game, I was in the middle against the Cardinals. I was kind of mostly listening and then watching a little bit. But his start against the Brewers, I actually watched. And it was fun to watch it on mute just because I had other things going on. And just watching and looking over, I'm like, oh, there's a power sinker. Up there's a splitter, power sinker, splitter, power sinker, power sinker, splitter. And he's just, the fact that he can call his own games, you know what I mean? He's just going. It's like watching a guy who's playing MLB The Show, and he's just doing it all himself. But Alex Cobb, I think it was Joey Bart a couple weeks ago, said he is maybe the most underrated pitcher in baseball. I remember distinctly quote tweeting it with being like, it's true and more people should be saying it. But it really is true, and more people should be saying it. He's a top 10 pitcher in baseball for sure.
Yeah, it's weird to think that if he was still on the Rays, people would be talking about how great he is. But in the Giants media market, people just don't care. Right. because, you know, Alex Cobb came up with the Rays, and he was sort of a product of their of one of their older versions of their different than the Giants, but still somewhat similar in philosophy, churn through players development system. You know, the Giants, of course, just pick up and discard guys constantly. The Rays have guys for like 3 or 4 years, and then they trade them and get more. And so, you know, that's where he came from. He wandered around a little bit before he came to the Giants. He was good last year. He's been great this year. And, you know, that sinker has been fantastic. Even, you know, the Mexico City series, he gave up, I think, 3 runs in 5 innings. In the game he pitched there, giving up 3 runs in 5 innings in that stadium. I mean, that's incredibly impressive.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it's 7 innings, no runs, 3 runs in 5 innings in Mexico City, and then a 9-inning shutout. Those are his last 3 starts. You really can't ask for more than that from a starter.
And just to be clear, if anyone's looking at Fangraphs, he's in the top 20 for baseball. But he is by wins above replacement for Fangraphs. He's number 7 in the National League. Obviously, the Mexico City series got in the way there. But he does everything that a ground ball pitcher. He is the modern ground ball pitcher. That I think, if nothing else, the what's the name of the warehouse that guys go to fix their pitches? The lab. What's the name?
Driveline.
Driveline. If there's nothing else, it seems like Driveline has made sinkers. They've optimized the sinker as much as they've optimized the four seamer. And we should give them tremendous credit because growing up, Doug, remember sinker ball pitchers? There was a certain mystique to them. I remember very much like Derek Lowe getting 3 days rest and them being like, well, it's good when a sinker baller is tired, right? Then it's even easier for him to throw a sinker. But now that's like when the guy's throwing like around 90, 92, he gets a lot of movement. But now driveline, it's like 95 with movement. And Alex Cobb with the same exact delivery is throwing a pitch in the same spot. And I'm talking about a sinker and I'm talking about a splitter. And they're doing two different things. And he's throwing it with such confidence that it's like, oh, this is the ace. And just think, Doug, he's teaching. He and Logan Webb are great friends. Like, they're very close with each other and they talk a lot. So he's sharing this knowledge with Logan Webb. It's an interesting dynamic that the two have, and the overlap is going to be fun to see how it improves. Logan Webb, that's where I was going with that. But yeah, anything else you want to say about Alex Cobb before we get into our interesting concerning?
I may or may not have written an article over the offseason where I said the Giants should trade him. And I encourage you not to look for that.
But we both talked about that because we looked at, he has a $9 million option for next year, $2 million buyout. We don't know where the Giants are going to be at the trade deadline or July or whatever. But Alex Cobb is such a valuable player that it seems almost silly that if they're not in a position of competing and I'll get into this in a little bit later. And if the market is showing that nobody's really caring about the Giants, it kind of, there's an argument that could be made, but for now, let's just enjoy it. I don't think you have to be that.
No, exactly. He's
I'm supporting.
He's very fun. He's very fun to watch right now. He's been the best pitcher on the team so far this year. Zero complaints, 5 stars.
Interesting and concerning. Let's get into that. Doug, what was something that interested you about the Giants this week?
I'm interested in the fact that Joey Bart is very good now.
Hmm.
You know, I think we've touched on his defense a little bit, or maybe I meant to touch on his defense and then I forgot to in one of the previous segments. I don't remember which one it is. But his defense has been good all year. It's been, you've noticed the improvement in it. In Houston, the first win in that series when he had to go make 3 mound visits to Camilo Duvall within 1 at bat, so Duvall wouldn't get the automatic ball 4 and walk whoever the hitter was.
Mm-hmm.
That was really heads up, and it was exactly what you want the catcher to do, like taking command of the situation. And then the next day, he only had to make 1 emergency mound visit to Duvall when he got the save. So you can already see the improvement there in Camilo Duvall, but he's also been hitting. He's been hitting very well lately. So far in May, he's hitting 300 with a couple doubles. I mean, it's only 14 plate appearances, but that's still a solid, you know, week of solid 4 days of hitting. And he's looked really good. He's, you know, I think there's going to be a lot of expectations on him because he was a number 2 pick overall that are maybe not fair or not the right way to think about Joey Bart. If Joey Bart can do what he's doing now and be like a productive, solid major league catcher, I think that's all you could really hope for. Not in a bad way.
No, I think that's he's been getting a lot of publicity. One thing I put in one of the series previews was watching him coming back from the IL to see how he would handle sort of the dual, hey, people are liking what you were doing before you got hurt, and now you're coming back from being injured. Let's see if there's not like a weird pressure on him. But the Duvall thing was such an impressive, okay, this guy is locked in. He's, you know what I mean? Like he's present in the moment. And I like to think that for athletes that if you can be present in the moment, it actually improves your chances of performing well. So the offense, I mean, right. The whole thing with Bart is like, can he stop striking out so much? Can he lower his strikeout rate, have more competitive at bats? And, you know, the pressure of him hitting in the middle of the order, that to me seems like a secondary concern. Let's like first settle with the defense and then settle with the lineup. And it seems like it. Yeah, it seems like he's getting there. I guess I'm going to say the really obvious interesting. I think it was really interesting that Marco Luciano came back and looks pretty good. he's finally playing. and he didn't play on Sunday, but he's had 17 plate appearances in Double A. 154 average, but a 353 on base percentage, 385 slugging. He did homer. It's just nice to have him in there, as I'll take the hit. I've already written him off because of his injury history, but you know, it's nice to see that they've taken his time. They've taken their time with bringing him back, I should say. And, you know, hopefully that will cause him to take off. I'm going to combine it with Casey Schmidt. That's my cheating, because Casey Schmidt's also still performing very well. So I'm finding it interesting that two of the spotlight prospects that we were like, keep your eye on these two, that it seems to be working out. I still think Casey Schmidt's pitch recognition or selection is maybe a little tricky, but it looks like he's got 8 walks against 28 strikeouts. It looks like, though, that gap is narrowing. Doesn't seem to be hitting for too much power, even though it's AAA, but he's also moving around the infield, playing a lot. I guess what I'm saying is I'm interested because you touched on this last week, Doug, and it seems to be following up here. Alex Pavlovich, in one of his stand-ups before one of the games this past week, said on NBC Sports Bay Area, like, specifically, the Giants are, in a way, kind of maybe thinking that one or both of these guys will help the major league team later in the season. And that's exactly in line with what you said, is like the Giants are kind of built waiting for a couple of pieces to arrive, whether that's like Aaron Judge or Carlos Correa, which is not happening, or Shohei Ohtani, which that's not happening. But if they got Marco Luciano or if they got Casey Schmidt or both in there, then it really would supercharge the lineup. It would make them seem very interesting. It would make them, more interesting. So there we go.
And I think another thing about Casey Schmidt, and this is something I talked about with Roger on the There Are Giants podcast this week. Go check that out if you want to. He has been playing mostly shortstop this year. He's started, as of the end of Saturday, he started 31 games, 20 of those he started at shortstop. So there are a couple warts in his offensive game that we've talked about. He doesn't quite have the power this year that he had last year. He's striking out a little more than you want, but those are a lot more forgivable if he's playing a solid shortstop, which from what I've heard, he is. So, you know, just another kind of factor to consider when you look at the season that Brandon Crawford's had, which he's injured right now, but has not been great overall. He's had a few good moments, but he's been showing his age. The Giants might well have another shortstop who's ready in the system, who can come up and hit well enough for a major league shortstop, which is a very big deal.
I know this isn't interesting, but and we're kind of expanding the segment here. We have a bullpen trust power ranking coming up here we need to get to. What have you thought about Tyro Estrada's defense at shortstop?
I think it's mostly been fine.
I think they really like Wisely, and the two of them seem to work well together up the middle.
Yeah, no, because I think Wisely at second and Estrada at short has been a really strong combination.
Anything else that's interesting to you this week, Doug?
Just Anthony DeSclafani continuing his really good season. Pitched 8 scoreless against the Astros. Didn't do it with any kind of regular, like the things you look for in a pitcher. You're like, did he strike out a lot of guys? No. He struck out 3 in 8 innings. Did he get a lot of ground balls? No. Didn't get a lot of ground balls. He just went out there and threw strikes, didn't walk anyone, and had just a very strong start where he kept guys off balance. It was great to see.
And then for me, I'm going to say, I mentioned Brett Wisely also, but Blake Sable, and I can see why they're still on the team, what the Giants see in them. And I think that the Giants are at a really good point in their competition window to be doing exactly what they're doing, which is like giving these guys a bit more playing time than you might expect. Part of that is some necessity, right? They don't really have a backup catcher situation solidified, but Wisely, he's playing like not terribly when he's on the field. Hitting wise, he's been hitting the ball hard. We saw him hit a home run. He had his first home run the other day. He also had a nice solid double late in Sunday's game. So it's, you can see the thought process with these two guys. And I'm not saying that means that the Giants are always right when it comes to these things. I mean, what, Michael Reed? We could go down the line of experiments that didn't quite come to fruition. And so I think it's interesting that it's finally happening where, and they're not being, don't know. I guess Wisely especially is really surprising me with his up the middle utility. That's a hard position to find a surprise in, I think. And so it's nice to see that maybe, at least for now, that they're holding serve with what they have in those two guys.
Yeah, I think that's been good to see. Brian, is there anything you found concerning?
I think there's an obvious one I might leave for you, but I'm going to find that the attendance continues to be concerning. I think it was 34,000 on Sunday, but I think it was like under 25,000 on Saturday. And, you know, the Giants are, I know, not an exciting team. I know that a lot of people have moved out of the Bay Area recently, but the numbers I saw the other day on some post was like, well, the wealthy people have moved out of the Bay Area, which means like the people that afford or are interested in buying Giants tickets, those are the ones who have gone. What are the Giants going to do about that? I think a big demographic shift in the region could be a big, big, big problem for them. And I don't know. I just would expect that the Giants would have a little more sizzle. That's it. I don't know. I don't know what, unless Buster Posey being gone is that big of a deal, which it could be. So,
yeah, I mean, it's interesting because we all remember the sellout streak that lasted for years and years and years. And some of those were bad years. Mm-hmm. And they kept that going, I think, from the end of 2010 to like mid 2017. Yeah. If I'm remembering right.
Yeah, it was in the 20s. Yeah.
And now they can't get, you know, 30,000 there on a Saturday night. And honestly, like if you look at how empty that ballpark was, the real number was probably 20,000.
Yeah. And they can't sell out Mets series. So, yeah, they can't. Yeah.
Yeah. I would say a concerning thing is all of the free agents.
I know. Hold on. Before you get into that, I love that they keep adding Joc Pederson in that to try to balance it out.
Anyway.
Yeah. they all were bad this week. Michael Conforto was bad. Mitch Haniger was bad. Sean Manaea, he got the win, but he was incredibly shaky looking. Ross Stripling was like passable in Houston and then bad against the Brewers. Against all odds, the one real free agent holding it down is Taylor Rogers right now.
And he's on a redemption arc even. He's not.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So it's been hard to watch. You know, it's not that the at-bats are uncompetitive or you can point to anything they're doing wrong. It's just they come up and you're like, well, here's another out. And then it's another out. So, Larry Bear wrote that article that whatever it was over the offseason. He was like, well, when fans see Conforto and Haniger and Sean Manaea and Ross Stripling, they'll know what the plan is. Do we? Do we know what the plan is? Because I think that explains a lot about the attendance.
I saw a couple of responses because either Triples Alley on Twitter or Baseball Jeff, who I really like, just keeping track of the numbers. Some fan responded like, well, of course, these guys were just supposed to be, Manaea and Stripling were just supposed to be holdover guys until the minors get going. And I didn't even mention Kyle Harrison in my he's starting to get better at his strikeouts to walks, but they're still limiting his inning. So when is he going to come up? But the idea that those two are effectively stopgaps until the Giants can get their shit together with the minors, it makes sense, but they're not being a stopgap right now. It's not working. So it's been tough for sure. I think the Manaea fastball velocity thing is the most intriguing part. It's like, how can he be so much better at one thing and terrible at literally everything else that's part of this game? It's tough. My next concerning thing is our next topic, the bullpen trust power rankings. Doug, going Woo-hoo! Into... That's right, we're bringing it back again. Going into my putting together the rundown, the bullpen accounted for, I believe, 0.6... negative 0.6 Fangraphs wins above replacement. I don't think it got much better after Sunday's game. It has not been a steady group, the bullpen. I'm deeply concerned about the Giants bullpen. I don't know why, because it didn't feel like it going into the season that it was going to be one of those terrible things, but I don't know. I mean, you put the hex on John Brebbia right away when we did our predictions.
I did. Yeah, 100%. Yes.
It's held firm. But anyway, so I wrote down, so we're going to do our bullpen and trust power rankings. Doug, why don't you start it off? Who's your number nine?
My number nine is, he has been sent down to the minors, but we are not going to forget Sean Jelly, who we all remember that there was a lot of hype over him in spring training, increased fastball velocity. He's looking great. He's really good. No, he's almost unpitchable at the major league level. And it's tough to see. I mean, he's very tall. You can't teach that. But right now it's not working.
So I had him at my number eight because at my number nine, I have Cole Waits, who was just called up and took his place. And and it's because of this. Cole Waits in the minor leagues before his call up was pitching. He had a 931 ERA in 9.2 innings pitched with 12 walks and 10 strikeouts. And he finally pitched for the first time in the major leagues this season on Sunday. And he gave up three hits in one inning and one strikeout. So I don't trust him. And I've seen Sean Jelly get outs before. So that was where I broke it down. But you're totally right. Whatever confidence any of us might have had in Jelly, that as he started making more appearances throughout the season, it evaporated pretty quickly, right?
Yeah, just almost instantaneously. Yeah. You know, the mustache is fun, especially with how tall he is, but it just doesn't work.
He and David Villar will always have that great video they did together. Great report. Yeah. Anyway. All right. So our eight and nine are some combination of Cole Waits and Sean Jelly.
The reason, just real quickly before we move on to seven, the reason I had Cole Waits at number eight, if you look at his last, I think, five appearances in AAA, he hadn't walked anyone. He'd looked better. So I was like, I don't know, maybe, you know, I know it doesn't work for Sean Jelly in the majors right now. Maybe Cole Waits it will. I don't think so. That's why he's so low. But I think it's at least more possible.
I know he's like Farhan Zaidi's most trusted guy because he's like, I need one of my draft picks to finally break through. So I think I read that he's the only Farhan Zaidi draft pick that's been called up in the almost 5 years that he's been running the team. So yeah, I think All right, so who's your number seven?
So number seven, it was a tough call here, but I think it has to be Jacob Junis.
Oh, okay.
He had a good outing on Sunday. And so that's kind of why I was going back and forth between him and the guy who's going to end up being my number six.
Who's your number six? Because I'm gambling. Beck. See, so I have Beck at seven and Junis at six.
Yeah.
But okay. I agree.
According to Fangraphs, Junis has been the worst pitcher on the Giants this year. He's been just literally every stat you look at other than xFIP. His ERA is awful. His expected ERA is awful. His FIP is awful. He's just been really bad. He's been giving up a ton of homers. He's been walking a few too many guys. He's been getting strikeouts, but it doesn't make a huge difference when you're giving up that many runs. So he looked better on Sunday. I'm going to make him continue to look better on across multiple outings before I move him up. But he's just not had it this year the way he did.
I'm going to agree with you because I was not a big Jacob Junis guy last season. And I was a little bit surprised that they tendered him a contract. So I'm going to go with you. And so I will agree. So we're in a total agreement on then our seven and six with Tristan Beck. Yeah. Tristan Beck, I like his stuff. I also think he's been just kind of left out there to eat up innings for them when the game seems well in hand. Nine innings pitched, nine strikeouts, three walks. I like that. 13 hits, two home runs. Don't like that. 5.25 FIP. But yeah, I mean, certainly better than Junis. So that's an easy call. But again, we're six in, and I don't like any of these guys.
Yeah, we're not quite at a guy who has any real use. Like who you'd be like, it's the eighth inning of a close game. Let's put it. No, none of them. Yeah. Not one of them.
So I think these next five, these are the people that you have to start think that you have no choice, but these are the only guys.
Yeah. Left these are that guys you think you have of. To trust. Yep.
So I'm going to guess, is your number five the same as my number five, John Brebbia?
No, actually, oh. I have Brebbia a little higher than that.
Oh, okay. Who's your number five?
My number five is Scott Alexander.
Oh,
disagreement is what makes this segment work. Scott Alexander started out really strong this year.
Oh, so strong.
And then he faded hard. Like it was tough to watch him for a while. And again, you know, one of those games was in Mexico City. You don't want to overrate the effects of that, but that was coming off a really bad outing against the Cardinals, and a couple outings before was a bad outing against the Mets. And so you kind of combine all of that, and he's gotten a lot worse. So his last couple outings have been fine. He pitched a third of an inning against the Astros and struck out his only batter, which is great. And he pitched in the second game in Mexico City too, and he had a scoreless inning. You know, you look at him and it's not quite the same as it was last year. And it's pretty obviously not the same as it was last year. And he's just, I mean, you know, sometimes pitchers get old. Sometimes pitchers have bad stretches. I don't want to say like, he's different from the first four guys we talked about. And then I'm not going to be like, no, don't put him in. Like, I understand why you would put him in. I don't necessarily think it's always the wrong move to put him in a close game. But it's also, I'm still pretty wary of him after that really rough stretch he had over about a week.
His sinker is still -4 in run value on StatCast. It's like one of the better sinkers in baseball. I completely agree with all your expected stats. I have a very specific reason why I flip-flop Brebbia and Alexander. But who is your number four?
Brebbia.
Oh, yeah. So Brebbia looked like he was dying the other day when they had to go get
yes.
him. So yeah. I'm like, uh-oh, is this it? Is he going to be down for injury? And his fastball, you pointed this out on Twitter, his fastball was like down 3 miles an hour or something like that. Yeah, so because he started like the season really strong. Yeah.
Yeah, his fastball, when he was able to throw a strike with it, was 91 on Saturday. Like the average at that point during the season was around 95. I think it was 94.7. And I was like, oh, that is really worrying. He can't throw a strike. He has to take it down that far. That's in today's major league game, right? A 91 mile an hour fastball, unless it's got a huge sink on it, that thing's going to get walloped.
So Scott Alexander, I'm used to him getting injured all the time. You know, that's kind of his deal. And John Brebbia, it's like, this could be the end of his useful life. I think he's 32 or something like that. And then Scott Alexander's old too. But, you know, again, these seem like not almost interchangeable in terms of the trust level. We're six spots in, and it's like, I don't know about any of these guys. It's tough. Yeah. So who's your number three?
In a shocking upset, considering the first couple weeks of the season, my number three is Taylor Rogers.
Mine too. Yeah. He's really turned it around.
He has absolutely turned it around. Like, I haven't forgotten. but he's, you know, over the last two or three weeks, ever since he's, I think, mostly abandoned the cutter. I haven't checked in on it lately, but he's just been a different pitcher. He's been a much better pitcher. He's been the guy that the Giants went out and signed, you know, over the offseason, and he's worth watching again. So I think a big part of it was that he had this weapon. He got really excited about it, and he should not have been excited about it because that cutter did not work.
I also think a part of it is that they're limiting his exposure right now, or they're not necessarily putting him in higher leverage spots, which, you know, it's probably in a way damning with faint praise, but I don't sit there and go, okay, this is a guy that they're absolutely relying on.
Over the last 2 weeks, he's not allowed an earned run. His FIP has been 3.16 but only in five innings. So 0.1 more.
But he's remarkably, noticeably different. He's finding the strike zone for one thing. Yeah, so he's been good there. Yeah, he was also my number three. So can I just guess what our one and two are then? Or two and one?
Yeah.
It's got to be Tyler Rogers and Camilo Duvall. Number one Duvall, yeah.
Tyler Rogers and number one Camilo Duvall.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Tyler Rogers has, you know, I trust Tyler Rogers a lot, but I still think like the gulf between Tyler Rogers and Taylor Rogers is a lot smaller than the gulf between Camilo Duvall and Tyler Rogers. I don't know how much ahead you put Camilo Duvall versus the rest of the pack, but I still think he's the most trustworthy reliever by a pretty decent mark.
Yeah, he is. I mean, when at the beginning of the season, he wasn't. His first three or four outings were pretty rough. And I don't know if that's the pitch clock, which he's still having some trouble with, but if it was getting into his head more, or if it just hangover from the World Baseball Classic where he pitched for, you know, for a week or two before his team got knocked out. But he, I remember his first game of the season was that Yankees game. He looked awful in that game. He had no business getting a save. He should have blown that save. And it just kind of mostly through the luck of balls finding gloves, he got it done. But ever since that first week of the season ended, he's been really strong. He's been looking great again. He's had a hiccup here and there, but overall, you know, he's exactly what you want. So kudos.
And Tyler Rogers has looked like the best version that the best that Tyler Rogers can look. And I think it's nice that last year he was able to regain that form, but I don't recall it being a smooth takeoff for him last season. I think he struggled the first couple of months and had to kind of find himself and get it back together again. Is that correct? Do you remember? I can't.
Yeah. It seems about right. Yeah. Tyler Rogers had a pretty rough time for a while last year.
I mean, certain things with Rogers is FIPs 3.71. His ERA is 2. That's very concerning. His home runs per 9 has shot way up. Again, juice ball bullshit. You know, the strikeouts are up. The walks are a little bit down. That's good. And with Duvall, we're basically looking at a pretty close version of the guy that we got last year. Pretty close. And I think the shakiness with the pitch clock is definitely where it's easy to say Duvall is not necessarily one of the elite relievers in the game right now, but he's close. I think he's sort of disqualified himself for the moment because Bart had to bail him out. Like, that was a very clear thing that was going on. And it was exactly what you said. It happened in the first game too. It's just, it's a little shakiness there. I'm not quite sure. Okay. So I think we're in pretty much agreement. Duvall, Rogers, Taylor Rogers. And then I go Scott Alexander, John Brebbia, you go John Brebbia, Scott Alexander. And then we're in agreement the rest of the way. I'll concede Tristan Beck, Jacob Junis, Sean Jelly, Cole Waits and Sean Jelly. So there we go. Sounds good.
Yeah. And again, the difference between Waits and Jelly in this list, it is very small. It's literally Jelly has already failed. And I think Waits will fail, but it hasn't happened that many times yet.
Yeah.
So
we're just waiting. Thank you for not including Matt Beattie, Sean Manaea, or Ross Stripling, which you could have done, but that was a good call. So not to do it. Just too cute. And obviously when Luis Gonzalez comes back, he would have made the list if he had.
Oh, 100%. Ross. He'd be probably number 6.
Doug, what are you writing about over on your Substack this week, do you think?
So I have an idea about writing about the free agents that the Giants didn't sign. For example, Carlos Rodon, who's going to be out till July, it looks like, and how that's, you know, it's nice that Farhan's able to avoid that, but that's not enough to build a team.
Farhan's idea is probably one of the best risk managers we've ever seen, which would make him a tremendous asset for like Lloyd's of London and other mass market insurance carriers and reinsurers. Yeah, that's great. I think I might try to figure out if balls are traveling a little bit farther at Oracle Park this year, knowing that I'm terrible at math, but I'm just going to look at some fly ball data and see if there's anything that jumps out, because maybe one or two of those home runs that were hit yesterday by the Brewers wouldn't have been home runs last year. That was my feeling. So
yeah, it's possible.
A couple weeks ago, we talked about one of our listeners, Drew Bader, one of his students. They had a fire. They lost everything. And we spotlighted their GoFundMe, gofundme.com/f/my-family-start-over. And as of May 5th, they're 7,000 or so short of their goal of 25,000, but they're getting there. So I'm just putting it out there for everyone to listen. And don't forget, we're a part of Fans First Sports Network. Check them out on social media, Fans First SN at Fans First SN on Twitter. And on YouTube, I know they're starting to get that going as well. Doug, how's your weight training going? Getting camera ready?
Great. I've gained like 10 pounds over the last week. How about you?
Likewise.
Yeah.
Follow at Giants Croncast on Twitter for sure. Check out Doug's blog, giantsdoug.substack.com. I'm writing at mccoveychronicles.com. And until next week,
go Giants!